big things take time. And so a lot of people want to be millionaires in 90 days and they spend 20 years trying to be millionaires in 90 days when you could pretty much guarantee it if you just paced yourself out 5 or 10 years and then did the activities to get there.
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast, hosted by Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race, and brought to you by Wild Health.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
Get fully personalized healthcare based on your DNA, biometrics, and blood work with Wild Health, the official healthcare provider of Spartan. Go to wildhealth.com and use the code SPARTAN10 to save 10%. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by 5.11, the official plate carrier sponsor of the 2022 U.S. Spartan events. Visit 5.11tactical.com/Spartan. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by the Exogen Ultrasound Bone Healing System. Exogen is a non-invasive treatment option that can help heal your broken bone. To learn more, visit exogen.com/Spartan.
Joe DeSena here, CEO and founder of Spartan and the Spartan Up podcast, where we attempt to rip people off the couch. It's getting harder and harder post-COVID. I've got an incredible guest, Alex Hormozi. You are in Vegas in a fire escape and a managing partner of Acquisition.com. What is Acquisition.com?
Right now, it's a portfolio of companies, of internet businesses that we take on. So usually they're between 3 and 30 million a year. And we help them go from, 3, 5, 10 to 30 plus. And that's across a wide, variety of different markets. So we've got publishing businesses, we've got photography chain, we've got certifications in fitness, we've got a bunch of different things.
What would you say, is there a common theme that you're seeing amongst these companies, especially the ones that are successful?
It's usually about the founders. Obviously there has to be, good economics in the business, which usually we're screening on the front end, as we like to have products that have very high gross margins and provide a lot of value. And so, we'll think about what is the ultimate value that we think that the products and services that this business, can provide to the end user. And then kind of reverse our way back to what we think the, overall potential of the business is. And the biggest constraint on that is going to be the character traits typically of the founder. Because for the most part, I think founders need to be worthy of the team that's going to get them there, because it's not going to be about them if they want to get to 30, 50, 100 plus million. It's going to be about the team that they can attract. And the limiter on the team that can be attracted is sure a function of the opportunity, but we screen for that on the front end. The second part of that is who the founder is and who the CEO is, who's running the business. And so that's why we screen really hard on that, so we can get really good partners who we believe have the character traits to go all the way.
I have three wise men, I call them, that have been advising me through my life. They're all three of them are in their 80s. And one of them, he's been trading. He's literally been trading since he's 13 years old. So 70 years he's been trading. And one of his sayings is, I bet on the jockey, not on the horse. So sounds like that's what your philosophy is.
100%.
Yeah. And when you see failures, because I'm sure we all see failures, right? Like, where does that typically come from?
Within the businesses?
Yeah, within the businesses or the what are you seeing as a theme amongst failures, so we could avoid that pitfall?
So I'd say there's micro and macro failures. You know what I mean? So micro failures are what I would just consider feedback from the marketplace, and those are just normal part of doing business. There's macro failure, which again is just larger feedback from the marketplace, which just requires more pain and endurance to get through. And I would say most times, and this is from what's his name? Packard or Hewlett. But he said that most businesses die of indigestion, not starvation. And so it's usually founders who get distracted from what the main thing is, and they start pursuing their own interests rather than the interests of their customers. And they start building things that become appendages and weird add-ons and doodads because it's really a passion project for them rather than, again, something that the customers really want. And I think a lot of founders and CEOs and really just anyone, we can get wrapped up in our own egos of thinking that this is such a brilliant idea and that we're totally right. When a lot of times it's just easier to ask them and see if they really want it. And is it core to us growing? Cause a lot of times it's, when we're creating a new product or if someone wants to create a new product, the first question we're going to ask is, what problem are we solving in terms of the business need? Like, is it that we're not growing fast enough? Okay. Can we solve that through generating more leads? Can we solve that through adding more salespeople? Can we solve that through, you know what I mean? There are other ways to solve the initial problem. And so that's, I would say, if there's a recurring thematic question that happens before we take any action with any of the portfolio companies, it's what problem are we solving? And then a lot of times we can avoid mistakes that way.
When I think about Kodak or the 100 Kodaks before Kodak that failed, right? Was that indigestion or did they just miss the mark on like digital photography or copy machines or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that we trumpet the blockbusters and the Kodaks that didn't adapt with the times, and we don't trumpet enough the thousands and millions of businesses that went out of business for changing for no reason. And so many entrepreneurs will take company size risk when the company is not at risk. And so in their instances, the company was at risk and they were not willing to take. And so the thing is they got that big because they learned how to not take company size risk. But at some point you need to, but most businesses don't have an underlying, and both of those were put out by huge technological changes. If you're in the dry cleaning business, unless there's some massive technology that's coming out that's going to completely uproot your business, most times that's not actually going to happen. And so the only thing that will put the company at risk is the entrepreneur choosing to do so. And that happens more times than not. And many times that gamble, even with a small percentage of risk, when risk adjusted, if you can take the downside risk of losing everything, why would you when there's other options you could take that don't risk everything? And so I think that a lot of times people will take these big risks because they perceive or have an emotional decision around what they think the risk is, when in reality, their company is not at risk, even though they are risking it.
Give me an example of that.
One of the portfolio companies we had right as we were taking them on was like, hey, it's a publishing business. And so they said, hey, we want to teach people how to, they already had a business of showing people how to publish books. Pretty cool. Very simple outcome. Learn how to publish a book, right? And they wanted to create an ascension for people who had bought that product of teaching people how to use the book to build a business in terms of using a book as lead gen to sell other services, et cetera, right? And I felt pretty strongly against this because it was not really key to the avatar that we were targeting, which is mostly people who don't have businesses. And so I said, guys, I really think we should just do maybe just a higher touch version of what we were already selling, because they've already said they want to learn how to publish a book. And why don't we just have another version that just like will help you do more of that, right? And, you know, basically we came to a standstill, and I said, let's just survey the customers. And so they sent the survey out, and 85% of the people wanted to just have more of what they had already purchased, and 15% wanted the other thing. And so in that instance, would they have risked losing the entire business? Maybe, maybe not. But the entirety of the time, the sweat, all the effort that goes into it, the money that would be going into launching a product that really didn't have product market fit would have been a huge detriment to the company. And the opportunity cost of that would have been all the growth that should have or would have happened if they had just followed along the other path. And so that's just like a simple example of when people will take a big risk that's unnecessary without listening to customer feedback.
Does a customer always know? I love that Steve Jobs quote, right? Like I don't know exactly how the quote was stated, but something along the lines of like, he claims to have known before the customer knows. I remember when the Apple phone came out, I had a BlackBerry and I was like, that's ridiculous. I don't even need that. Now you can't live without it.
Yeah. And Henry Ford also said, if you ask customers what they want, they would ask for faster horses. Right. But I would say that those, again, are like the exceptions that get trumpeted to the rule. Like most of us are not Steve Jobs, most of us are not Henry Ford. And so I think to the same degree, if we had shown people a version of what the iPhone would have looked like, you know, you said the same thing with Uber, right? Maybe if we had articulated in that way, they would have known, they would not have wanted it. But what do people always want? People always want convenience. They always want speed. And so I think if we look at like one chunk above that, would people have wanted fewer menus, fewer buttons, an easier way to navigate, faster processing? All of those things people would say yes to. It's just the package that was a little bit different.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So all day, every day, are you working with the companies you guys have already invested in, or you're finding new companies, or a little bit of both?
I would say I'm 90-10. So probably 10% of my time is making, content videos, things like that. And I make that partially just for the portfolio companies as well. It just happens to be public. And then the other 90% of my time is focused on all the portfolio companies.
And fitness. Fitness a part of your life?
It is. Less than it was a long time ago. But it is a part of my life. I do it more out of habit now than outcome.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I love this statement. If you want to change, you know, your mental state, change your physical state, right? Like business is a combat sport. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but for me, you know, maybe I'm doing it the wrong way. I am in a battle all day, every day. And without the fitness component, it'll be hard for me.
Oh, I think there's a lot to unpack there.
Let's unpack.
Yeah. I think it is a fight if you choose to make it a fight. If you know what I mean? I think in some ways it could be a dance, depending on how you choose to view it. And then in terms of, you know, being physically fit to take on stress, I think there's a lot of ways people relieve stress. The question is which of these ways are not punitive on other aspects of life. And so somebody might take out stress by playing music. And that has no physical fitness component to it, but that might be exactly what they need to do to kind of give them a respite or a rest from maybe the stressors of their day, whatever. And so I think it's just like, what problem are we solving? If business is stressful, why is it stressful? And then if we choose to accept it as stressful, what are we going to choose to do to not, you know, to unstress or de-stress if we deem being stressed as a problem?
Yeah, I you're right. I mean, I don't know. I think I've been in stress my entire life because I seek it, yeah. Right? It awakens the senses. I think I probably combine 4 or 5 of your potential stress solutions into one, right? Music, meditating, running, all at the same time.
Sure.
I don't know. I feel like if I don't work out, I don't know if you're this way. If I don't work out, I don't have a good day. It's kind of like when you wash your car and it drives better somehow.
I don't have that. If anything, if I'm training really hard, it ends up detracting from my work because I am tired. I'm physically fatigued from the training. And so, I think, again, it goes into like, what problem are we solving? And so for me, if I just want to maintain muscle, I know like minimum volume requirements for muscle groups, I can probably train once to twice a week with moderate intensity, not do myself too much joint pain or joint stress. And pretty much look the same as, you know, as long as I keep my macros in check. And so for me, that is probably the season I am in. When I have less work, I tend to train more. And that's just because I have more time and because I see it as a fun thing rather than a life extender.
You don't think fitness will extend your life or that's not
much and not the way that I do it.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of longevity, a big part of it is just total body mass. So, you know, the smallest people live the longest. Chihuahuas live longer than Great Danes. And so if I really wanted to live a long time, I would just lose all the muscle mass that I have and get really small. That would be the best thing to do.
I have a good buddy, actually my fourth wise man. He's in his 90s. He only eats raw fruits and vegetables. He was a weightlifter back in, probably back in the 50s or 60s, but 55 years only eating raw fruits and vegetables. And his argument would be, do you want to, you know, you want to have the biggest biceps in the cemetery. So yeah, same,
agreed.
Same idea. I do it. I saw my dad die at a young age. I saw my mom die at a young age. I saw a lot of people that didn't have to leave the planet when they did. And I feel like, you know, eating healthy, taking care of yourself. I'm having a lot of fun as well. Even though I'm under all the stress, I'm having a lot of fun on the planet. I don't want to leave.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, I train despite the fact that I know that I'm shortening my life.
You may be super fit, but do you know if you're insulin resistant? Hi, I'm Dr. Julie Fouché from Wild Health. I have a lot of patients who work out all the time. They eat generally well, but they still show some signs of early insulin resistance. 1 in 3 Americans have prediabetes, and 84% of those don't even know that they have it. The only way to determine if you have signs of insulin resistance is to get regular screened blood work with your doctor. Your doctor may also be able to prescribe something called a continuous glucose monitor, which will allow you to see how your body responds to different foods throughout the day. Now, let's say that you do have some signs of early insulin resistance. There's a lot you can do to reverse this trend. The first thing is going to be making some changes to your diet. So decreasing your overall carbohydrate intake, making sure that you're not eating sugar or any refined carbohydrates. You may also want to incorporate some intermittent fasting. This can help a lot with insulin resistance too. You want to be doing regular exercise, but making sure that you're not overtraining. And then sleep and stress can play a big role in insulin resistance as well. So these are often under-recognized, but big players when it comes to developing insulin resistance. Make sure you're getting enough sleep at night and doing some things to mitigate stress like mindfulness. So even though you're exercising a lot, maybe you're eating pretty well, make sure you know where you stand when it comes to insulin resistance and do everything that you can to reverse that trend.
Wild Health, the official healthcare provider of Spartan. This episode is also sponsored by 5.11, the official plate carrier sponsor of the 2022 U.S. Spartan events. 5.11 is a global innovator in tactical and technical apparel, footwear, and purpose-built gear. You've seen our athletes wearing their vests. 5.11 is also hosting Spartan workout tour events at select 5.11 retail stores. These include 90-minute bodyweight training sessions, challenging the mind and the body, catering to all levels of fitness. Everyone is encouraged to join. And you could enter to win 5.11's TAC-TEC plate carrier at select Spartan Honor Series, Stadium, and Workout Tour events. And last but not least, visit 5.11 at 15 different Spartan races throughout the year to take part in their 5.11 Fitness Challenge. Go up against Spartan racers, earn exclusive branded 5.11 Spartan dog tags, and you can get 20% off your next 5.11 purchase. Find out more at 511tactical.com/Spartan. 5.11, always be ready. We'll be right back to this interview, but first, a little bit from our sponsor, Exogen. Spartans, you know a broken bone can interrupt daily activities and even worse, keep you on the sidelines. Determining the best treatment option can be stressful. In just 20 minutes a day, Exogen helps jumpstart your natural bone healing process so you can get back to the race. Don't let a broken bone keep you on the sidelines. Talk to your doctor to see if Exogen is right for you. Exogen is indicated for the healing of non-union fractures and for accelerating the healing of certain acute fractures with no known contraindications. To learn more, visit exogen.com/Spartan. That's exogen.com/Spartan. Okay, back to the interview.
I train despite the fact that I know that I'm shorting my life. So I am making that trade-off actively because why not be jacked? And so I tend to do this. So like I can completely appreciate it. I think a lot of times people will try and say that the thing that they're doing is amazing for all aspects of life. Like, do I think that if I train more, I make more money? No, I don't think that. Do I think that if I train more, I'm going to live longer? No, I don't think that either. I think that if I train more, it means I train more and that's all. And if I enjoy training, then awesome. And that's why I choose to do it. But that's it. And if we look at the entire amount of time, let's say somebody trains seriously, they train 10 hours a week, right? I mean, that's a moderate, you know, amount of time, but a pretty serious, you know, training. You do that for whatever, 40 years. You know, if you look at that on your waking hours basis, if you're awake, whatever, assuming you sleep, 7 hours a night, you're at, 17 hours a day that you're awake times seven. But of the 17 hours that you're awake, you know, 10% of your life is literally training, not including showering, going from, et cetera. So it might even be more like 15% of your life is training. Well, it'd be really hard to make the argument that I'm going to live 15% longer. I'm going to go from 74 to whatever, you know, 85, based on just doing that training. Maybe, but I could also just die at the same age and just have used 15% up at the gym, which is fine if that's the trade-off you want to make. Not to get like, I think about this a lot because I think about the time cost of doing this stuff.
I think in my dad's case, again, one example, he would have got the extra 15%. Again, you got to be careful what you trumpet. I like that sentence from you. But I can think of a lot. I come from a neighborhood. If you ever saw the movie Goodfellas, I come from that neighborhood where as soon as people achieve success, somehow cigars entered their life and drinking and big bellies and like,
yeah.
And so extreme examples in the other direction, right? Like if you're comparing yourself to other fit people, you're probably not going to squeeze out another 15%.
Well, this is a really good one, because if we think, is there another way to achieve that without training? And the answer would be yes. If you walked for 30 minutes and had a calorie neutral diet and stayed within a normal BMI, you would get that 15% without the time cost.
It's funny because I probably categorize taking the stairs rather than that's training, right? It's not just going and moving weight.
Yeah.
So I, when I watch my boys wrestle, yeah. And so when I'm done with this podcast, I'll head to the gym to watch them wrestle. But unlike the other parents that are all just looking, I get on the Airdyne bike and I'm working out while I'm watching. Like, why wouldn't I? You know?
And that's net zero time. So that's great. You know what I mean? It's like if I plan on listening to podcasts and I can do it while I'm walking, awesome. Or if I plan on having a meeting with my wife about how we're running, you know, portfolio companies, we could do it across the table where we can walk and talk. And so I think that when you combine them so you have net zero time, I think that's beneficial. It's harder to do that like in a true training environment for some types of activities.
We're aligned. Why Vegas? Why are you in Vegas?
Biggest reason was just to mix it up. I'd say the things that we've discovered since we've been here that didn't factor into the original decision, but have kept us liking the decision, was... there's a lot of networking that is done out here because most people come to Vegas once a year. A lot of people have business conferences, have events, have workshops, have seminars, have vacations, have whatever out here once a year. And so I end up having, you know, 2 to 3 dinners a week with people that I'd normally otherwise wouldn't see. And so that's a huge, probably the biggest benefit of Vegas besides, you know, the number one place for food and beverage in the world. Or at least in the United States, you know, some of the best shows and entertainment out there. It has an airport that's, you know, from my door 7 minutes away and goes to just about everywhere direct. So like there's lots of, you know, no taxes. It's dry all the time. So there's no humidity. 9 months of the year, it's sunny and great. And the other 3 months, it's just very hot.
Very hot. You find yourself getting drawn into a game of blackjack?
No, I don't gamble. And we don't drink much either. We just kind of get all the peripheral benefits. So it's the food and beverage and the shows and like fights are right downstairs for me. So we can see all the UFC fights in person, the Knights play in the same stadium. So, just lots of like, there's always activity. And I think that in Layla and I's last season, it was super, super, we isolated ourselves a lot and worked pretty much all the hours, you know, that we were awake functionally. And we don't have kids. And so that's what we did. And, I think for this season, we said, you know, let's try and create ways that on accident or with very little effort, we can create, you know, different experiences for ourselves.
I love it. We just moved the family. We have a farm in Vermont where the Spartan was started, and I was having a tough time getting people back into the office post pandemic. And, I just said, I gotta shake things up, try to get people back into an office. And Florida would never have been on my list, nor Vegas. And I ended up coming down to Florida and, much for the same, I'm finding the same outcome where I'm just meeting so many people, it's 80 million people, whatever the number is, some crazy amount of people come into Orlando every year. And, you can't help it. You just bump into people.
Yeah. It's great. So,
and unlike you, you don't go to Vegas, you know, you don't go to a casino. I don't go to Disney much. So, all right. Give me 3 business tips for these young entrepreneurs out there that are catching you on social media. And they're like, man, I gotta start an internet company. 3 business tips, simple ones.
You have to envision yourself doing the thing that you're doing, you know, for 10 years or more in order to get the outsized returns. Big things take time. And so a lot of people want to be millionaires in 90 days and they spend 20 years trying to be millionaires in 90 days when you could pretty much guarantee it if you just paced yourself out 5 or 10 years and then did the activities to get there. So that'd be number one. Number two is that it takes dramatically more volume of effort than most people anticipate in order to get new customers and do a good job. And so the easy example that I tell for this is that when I started my first gym, which is the first business or second business that I had, I had a mentor say, you should try flyers. And I was like, okay. So I, you know, went, put the flyers out. Nothing happened. He called me up. He's like, yeah, how the flyers go? I said, one guy called me and said I dented his car, but that's about it. And he's like, well, how, you know, what was your test size? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, what was the test size you put out? I was like, well, I mean, I put out 300 in total. He said, 300. He's like, we put out 5,000 as a test. He's like, and then we do 5,000 a day once we have a winner. And so I think a lot of, you know, I was doing the right thing, but I was doing dramatically too little of it. And so a lot of times it's like, hey, you know, you got to do a direct mail piece, or you have to make cold calls, or you have to do direct messages, or you have to run ads. And people spend $10 a day on ads and think, oh, why is my business not exploding? Right? Or they'll do, you know, 5 reach outs a day and wonder why their business isn't exploding, when the guys who are doing it professionally because they want to go pro are doing 200 a day. And so a lot of times it's not like 2 times or 3 times more. A lot of times it's like 100 times more effort. And in my case, it was like 300 times the effort of what I was doing compared to what was required. So one is it takes longer than you think. Second is it takes more volume than you think.
I love both of those, by the way. I'm always screaming at the team that we need tremendous scale in this thing that we're doing. Like, don't talk to me about 1 or 2. We need 20,000.
Your brand is built on the promise, the discrepancy between the promises you make and the promises you keep. And so you can create a bigger discrepancy by promising less or delivering more. And I think that the discrepancy between those variables is what will create the viral word of mouth that you want within the business and will create a brand that lasts. What most people do is the opposite. And so they take the local benefit and take a global cost. So they overpromise and they underdeliver, because it's easy to today in the short term overpromise, and then long term it's very hard. But that's why most people eat cookies instead of having a 6-pack, is because they cannot delay gratification. And so I think that if you, again, almost all three of these are related to time. And so, you know, in terms of the amount of volume that it takes, the amount of time that it takes, and then in terms of practicing good business from a promising and expectation setting perspective, if you can focus on those pieces and the discrepancy between those two, you'll have a business that can sustain the test of time.
I think about Spartan. I think about, we probably promise very little. We promise pain, suffering, barbed wire, bruises. But when you actually cross the finish line, it's like, oh my God, that was fucking unbelievable. So by accident, we probably have a very small delta between promise and delivery, right? Right. It's really hard for people to complain about the parking at a Spartan race when it's muddy, because like they know what we like, this is going to suck. Right. But that's what you're buying.
Do you think that people are buying that it's going to suck, or they're buying the feeling they're going to have afterwards?
I don't think they're buying the feeling they're going to have afterwards. I believe most people are really tough to convert into what we do. It's usually somebody roping them in. They're scared out of their mind, so they start putting the cookies down. They start going to bed early. No one likes that discipline that's required. And I don't know. I've probably had 130,000 conversations yeah. with folks. And I mean, there's certainly people like you, right? Or me, that like, you know, they understand it right away and they want it. But most people are scared out of their minds. You're awesome. Thanks for going into the fire escape and doing this.
I appreciate you having me on. Hope we were able to provide some value to the audience. So thank you so much.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by the Exogen Ultrasound Bone Healing System. Exogen is a non-invasive treatment option that can help heal your broken bone. To learn more, visit exogen.com/Spartan. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by 5.11, the official plate carrier sponsor of the 2022 U.S. Spartan events. Visit 5.11tactical.com/Spartan. Maximize energy, optimize nutrition, and improve performance with Wild Health. Personalized precision healthcare built for Spartans. You'll get a personalized health plan based on your DNA and biometrics, and the support of a team of health experts. Sign up at wildhealth.com with the code SPARTAN10 to save 10%.